I think the biggest problem that I have is the way that people make up these false claims or these false causes to why we have this problem. Maybe social media does impact some people, but is that the real cause to why people are committing suicide or why they're doing other things? Maybe not. Who gave you that information? Have you spoken with actual teens? Have you interviewed these people? Do you only have a 17-year-old daughter or son? And you're like, well, I know how they feel.
Hey there, I'm Siobhan Reed, your guide here on Future Health Now, where we're all about advocating for health equity and generational wellness starting today. If you're a public health professional, parent, or community leader concerned about the well-being of our next generation, well, then you are in the right place. A great way to plug into our community is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at futurehealthnow.com. where we'll keep you informed about upcoming events, educational content, and ways to stay engaged. Today, you'll get to tune into a conversation I had with a very special person, my daughter, Lauren, who is a brilliant human being. We had a chance to talk about her perspective around the central question of how to have better, more intentional conversations between generations. I'm excited for you to walk away with some of the key takeaways I learned, such as how social media does or does not play into the current mental health crisis, some of the root causes of people being unable to have safe and open conversations across generations, and how we as public health communicators can do better going forward. All right, let's jump right into the conversation with Lauren. Enjoy. Hi, Lauren. How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing good. So excited to have this conversation with you here today.
Me too.
Tell me, what is a commonly held belief about Gen Z and the root causes of the mental health crisis that you passionately disagree with and why?
I think the biggest misconception that I disagree with would be that technology and the change in technology and social media is the biggest cause for mental health issues. I don't think that's necessarily true. I think that the technology we have now is used, it can be used in our benefit rather than only in negative ways.
So tell me a little bit more about, you know, how you think things have been changing. Do you feel like they're changing constantly? And what does that mean for a young person like yourself?
Well, just like with the new technologies we have now, I mean, 4 years ago, it was like, okay, you go to school every day. And then in 2019, end of 2019, beginning of 2020, places were closing, schools were closing, and technologies were used in our benefit. So we could wake up and pick up a computer and go to school, go to class. So that's not necessarily a negative aspect. That's more of a positive way that technology was used.
Okay. Now tell me, do you feel like people have really been able to adapt to that? And have you seen some challenges that have come out of, you know, the seclusion that happened during the pandemic?
Well, I think that having the technologies and the different opportunities to reach out to people and connect has been very beneficial and helpful as far as seclusion and communicating with others. It's like for school or work or meetings or leisure conversations. I think technology has been very helpful and not in a negative way and more positive impacts.
What do you wish public health agencies and communications professionals better understood about how Gen Z generally prefers to consume information about their health?
I think that a lot of people that are healthy and young don't really think of that they need to know certain things or that they need to do things like exercise or spend time focusing on their health. But I think with the right campaign or maybe in stressing the importance of why you still need to focus on your health, even if you are a healthy person, to maintain the healthiness, I think that's very important, especially for people that are young and in shape.
Got it. Now, can you think of a campaign that has impacted you that was really trying to drive some kind of behavior when it comes to mobilizing you for better health?
Honestly, no, I don't think I really pay attention to many campaigns because I am healthy and young. And I don't think that I spend a lot of time focusing on, well, what do I need to do to stay healthy? Because I consider myself a healthy person now.
Okay. So why do you think people struggle to communicate across generations?
I think there's such a gap and a fear of change and that maybe Gen Z versus people that were born 50, 60, 70 years ago. It's like, there's so much new stuff to learn. There's so many new opportunities. And for someone that's 15, 16, 17 years old, it's like, well, that's all we know. That's what we were born learning or raised learning. We understand that stuff because we don't have the different ways that people used to do things 40 years ago. We don't have to learn that plus what's going on now. I feel like people that are much older than the Gen Z or whatever has a problem with understanding how to change it, and they're maybe afraid of change, or it seems overwhelming at the time because there's so many different ways and different opportunities of change.
Mm-hmm. Do you feel like they listen to you?
I feel like in some regards they do, but especially with new technology, I do not think that they do. I think it's just overwhelming. And a lot of times they say, well, I can't learn how to do that. That's a new thing. That's y'all's generation thing. I couldn't do that. I don't know how to use this technology. But that's not necessarily the case, because there's people 30 years older than me that know how to use technology way better than I do, a computer, iPhone, a laptop, whatever you want to call it, a lot better than I would.
Mm-hmm. So now tell me, if you were sitting next to a leading executive at the Centers for Disease Control or the National Institute of Health or any other major agency that is charged with stewarding public health, what would you ask them?
I like this question. I would ask them, how do they know the information that they're putting out? A lot of times they're like, well, there's a rise of teen suicide, or there's a rise of teen mental health illnesses. Well, how do you know what's causing that? How do you know? Maybe your 50-year-old man is telling us, how do we know why a 16-year-old girl is feeling this way, or why teenagers are doing this? Did you ask them that? Did they tell you that? Where did you get that information from?
That's really deep. I know sometimes I make some assumptions about what I believe you and your sister are feeling, and not necessarily getting the information directly from you. And then after having spoken with you, come away from that conversation with a different feeling, a different understanding, and being able to empathize and see it from a different perspective. So I can definitely appreciate your perspective on that. So now tell me, the other generations, do you feel like they're empowering, you know, people to bridge the divide between the generational communications?
I really don't think there's enough importance stressed on the generations connecting, because just because someone is 20 years older than you, or even 10 years older than you, that doesn't mean that you guys can't learn how to do the same things, or you guys can't work together or interact together or learn how to use the same technologies. There is no age on how old you need to be to learn how to use a phone, or how old you need to be to understand how to use technology.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So now tell me, because we always assume that it's easy for you guys to speak to older generations, whether it be a family member or public health official or even a counselor or a teacher or friends. And so, like, how can older generations create a safe environment to help you have authentic conversations, especially when you're young and invincible and you see things from a different lens?
I think to make it a more comfortable environment, they have to be open to what they're able to get. They can't squeeze out every last bit of information. If someone's willing to give you this much, well, don't ask for so much more. And then there's a lot of misconceptions with blaming it. Well, you feel this way because you can't tell someone why they feel this way. You can't tell someone why they are upset about something or why they shouldn't be, because that's just going to make an environment where someone wouldn't want to come talk to someone else.
So tell me, how can younger generations approach these conversations to understand where older generations are coming from?
I think they just have to be open to learning, because a lot of times older generations are more likely to express or give advice or pass experiences to younger generations than it is vice versa. But I think younger generations maybe don't pay as much attention, or they're like, well, I don't need to know that. How's that going to affect me now? Tell me that again in 15 years.
Okay, so now let's switch gears a little bit. With the rise of teenage suicide and the overall mental health crisis, what is the change you most hope to see in the world? And what's a good first step for us to get there?
I think the biggest problem that I have is the way that people make up these false claims or these false causes to why we have this problem. Maybe social media does impact some people, but is that really the real cause to why people are committing suicide or why they're doing other things? Maybe not. Who gave you that information? Have you spoken with actual teens? Have you interviewed these people? Do you only have a 17-year-old daughter or son? And you're like, well, I know how they feel, so I know why your son did that.
Okay. Yeah, because different people have different triggers, different things that they're dealing with that might not necessarily spark certain reactions in others, right? Okay, so now I want to ask you this question. How can older generations specifically create better conversations around health and wellness?
I definitely don't think campaigning is one of the biggest things. A lot of people think, well, if we have a colorful campaign, it'll attract younger people. Well, maybe not. Maybe you should express maybe what you were doing at the age of 20 or 15 or whatever. What were you doing that you could have done better for your health? What were you doing as far as, were you eating or how are you exercising? A lot of times it's random factors that are not have anything to do with how you exercise. Why is technology, because you're on your phone, doesn't mean that's why you don't exercise. I don't exercise and I don't think I spend too much time on my phone, but there's people that spend more time on their phone that exercise way more than I do. So I don't think that those factors that are just thrown out there, well, you don't exercise, well, it's because of the new technology. It's because of the way that they teach you in schools, or it's because of this. No, just have the conversation and say what should be done, not why it's not being done. Don't always have something or someone to blame.
Now, I thought about this campaign that was launched a couple years ago, I think in school, and it was called No Place for Hate, I think. Do you recall that campaign at all?
I have heard of that, yes.
Okay, so, but now when I asked you about it earlier, any kind of campaign, you was like, no. Okay, but now thinking in terms of that campaign, can you think of some things that may have worked or did not work well with that campaign? Because I think there was definitely an assembly that was associated. I feel like maybe they gave out some bans. But what could have made that campaign stick a little more, or did it impact you at all?
Well, now that I think about it, I do remember those campaigns, and then they would have assemblies at school, and they even had a thing on Instagram that was like, you could post it or show that you supported the foundation or something like that. I think that was beneficial, but what is telling people about it going to do? Like, okay, yes, there's no place for hate. People should be kind, but was there really a change in kindness? Because at that time, I don't think I saw any people around me or people, you know, in my school or classrooms or whatever that were really changing because of this campaign.
Mm-hmm. Do you think there could have been other pieces to the campaign that might have resonated? Like, do you listen to podcasts? Do you listen to any kind of TikToks or Instagram feeds that may be talking about health and wellness or trying to, you know, make people feel better or anything like that?
Well, I don't think I listen to really much podcasts or TikToks about that kind of stuff, but I do think that the approach in schools or social media is wrong. Because like when they bring to you that in middle school or in high school, they say, if you bully someone or if you're mean to them, or if you harass them, you'll get suspended or you'll get punished. But they're not telling you about the mental effects of that or how that could cause someone to do something later in life or how that could affect someone many years from now, or even 1 year from now. They're not telling you that. They're telling you, well, if you do this, you could get suspended. If you do this, well, we will call your mom. Some people are not, they don't care about that. They don't say, well, I don't want them to call my parents, or I don't want to get suspended. They're just like, okay, well, it's not really affecting me, because some people don't see that as a big effect on them, because you get suspended for one day and you're right back the next day.
Mm-hmm. So I'm curious to know, what do you feel like are some of the things that you may pay attention to or lean into when it comes to health communications coming your way? So in school, especially, like I spoke with a couple of college students that said they didn't see any kind of communications anywhere posted throughout their campus that would give them any kind of insight about, you know, being well or avoiding risky behaviors. So Is there anything that you think that might resonate with Gen Z a little bit more?
I think just expressing the importance or maybe taking a mandatory class. There's like a lot of classes, like in health class, they teach you, okay, well, it's like 9 weeks long and it's like, okay, don't drink and drive, don't do drugs, be careful when you do this, be careful when you do that. But they don't say, well, if you bully someone, then this is what happens with mental health. They don't speak about depression and anxiety. They maybe say, what's the textbook definition of it? And then you have to write it down. That's the last you hear of it. Nothing is really focused on. I mean, they have psychology classes and certain things that you can look into, but everyone isn't obligated to take that, or everyone is obligated to learn about that. So a lot of people don't see the importance of learning about it. They don't hear about it. So if you don't hear about it, you won't know about it. And if you don't know about it, then you won't know that it's important or that you should learn more about it.
Mm-hmm. So how important is it that your peers actually engage with you to try to influence your behaviors? Is that a big deal? Would you listen to your peers? Could there be some sort of ambassador programs that might work well to help drive more awareness and engagement in healthier behaviors?
I really think that that's where the problem comes in. It's a choice. Like if someone wants to exercise or they want to do this or they want to learn more, then they will. Now, I do think that people that are healthy and in shape should learn more about health and why it's important to maintain these healthy behaviors so you don't get unhealthy. I do think that's important. However, I feel like people, when they think of health and exercise, they're like, well, I don't need to exercise if I'm not overweight. I don't need to eat right if I'm not over the weight I want to be at. People don't see the importance. They're like, well, I'm fine now, so it's not going to affect me. People always think it's not affecting me. Well, it could affect you. So I think the approach needs to be different, because if, now that I think about it, like all exercise campaigns or health campaigns are like, are you obese? Are you too much weight for what you, where you want to be? That they're never like, even though you're healthier, you're in shape or you're smaller than, you know, you're not obese or whatever. They're never targeting those people. They're only targeting people that consider themselves fat or consider themselves obese.
That's really good insight. I know there's definitely stigma around the word obese, right? Because even if you don't look obese, but you're overweight for your height and frame structure, then you tend to just kind of think, well, I'm okay. But then if someone says you're obese, you kind of have a negative connotation around that. And I don't even know how do we get around that. Like, so people aren't looking at it and having that stigma. I think we have to come up with a better way to have the healthier conversations around fitness and wellness and just overall health, right? Oh, wow. This has really been a great conversation with you, Lauren. So tell me what's giving you the most hope right now for your future.
I think that just having good support systems is very important, and knowing that I can do something or that I will be able to do something is very important.
Mm-hmm. And tell me, what do you hope the listeners will take away from our conversation today?
That it's not, that you need to know how to approach a situation before approaching the situation, or you need to know, have credible sources before you just state information.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, this has really been good and very insightful. So hopefully we've been able to educate and inform folks who are actually launching these health communications campaigns on how to better resonate the message and mobilize Gen Z. Thank you so much, Lauren. Have a wonderful day.
Yes, thank you for having me, and you too.
That's a wrap to another edition of Future Health Now. We're incredibly grateful for the opportunity to serve you with this content and want to stay connected. The best way to do this is to sign up for our monthly newsletter at futurehealthnow.com. While you're there, we want to hear your feedback and make sure you feel this community is a resource that helps you feel best equipped for the public health education journey, one that you'll be proud to be a part of, and share the content with others so we can empower the healthiest, well-informed human population in history. If you haven't already rated the show on Apple or wherever you listen to your podcast, please simply tap the number of stars you feel this show deserves. This helps to get this content in front of more people and again, gauge how we can continually add more value to this community. This podcast wouldn't be possible without the help from our executive producer and production team at Chat with Leaders Media. If you're looking to launch your very own podcast in the industry you serve, go to chatwithleaders.com. Now go enjoy a healthy, encouraging, and joy-filled day.